In the ideal shopping mall, each store sells a different item, shoes, pants, lamps, organs, and each is run by a different species of animal. Rabbits run the sunglass hut, bears the vanity license plate kiosk. There's one empty storefront called Yarborough where you can trade things you bought with other shoppers. And there's not just pictures with Santa, but all sorts of other mythical figures on whose laps you can sit, like the Monkey King or Anansi.
That's great. But that's the plot to Busy Busy Bazaar.
What?
The movie, Busy Busy Bazaar. You just described the plot.
Oh, that can't be.
Oh, that can't be.
Oh, that can't be. What in the world?
Are you mocking me?
No, you did the Ali Carrick catchphrase. Oh, that can't be.
That's what Ali Carrick says. Oh, that can't be. And what in the world?
It can't be this impossible to be original.
It can't be this impossible to be original, too, is even better, though.
I love that movie.
You two have lost your minds.
You two have lost your minds.
No, it's like this. You two have lost your minds.
We're just pointing out where we heard that idea before. Both of us have seen more movies than you have. Granted, you've read more books.
True.
But for an idea to be truly original, you have to go way out there. Like my idea for a story about a half-blind monk who comes to an island full of penguins and accidentally baptizes them so the Lord has to give them all souls and make them human-like birds.
Well, that's Penguin Island by Anatole France.
But I bet I have different names for all the characters.
I'm sure you do. That means that technically, your story is unique, but not original.
Well, what's an original story?
Well, something like a man walks into...
Been done!
And then he sees a...
Been done!
So he must then...
Been done!
I get your point. But what's the thing that makes your story the same as Anatole France's story?
Well, you said it's the blind monk baptizes penguins. That's more like a picture or something than a story. It is a situation that is fertile ground for interesting consequences.
How many of these pregnant ideas are there out there?
Hey! What if I made one of the penguins Gilligan?
Make all of the penguins Gilligan.
And the monk is 20 feet tall.
Now you're just making collage art.
Is it original if I cut and paste elements from other stories?
Well, it gives you a greater chance of accidentally coming up with a good idea. And you acknowledge that there's nothing new under the sun.
God, I hate that expression. Can you come up with a better way of saying that?
No, that would be a paradox. Anyway, I invented a random story generator. That way, we aren't hard up for ideas for the show.
Anything that saves us from thinking imaginatively and spontaneously, I'm for.
How's it work?
Okay, so first we create a place. I push a button. And a cave.
Wow.
Neat, huh?
It's a cave. But it's also a big blanket that we're under in a bed.
Lou, that was for the ending. Don't say that yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
If that happens again, if you recognize the place or a character from something that happens later, don't yell out.
Again, my bad.
Let's try a different location. Seaside.
I love it! I instantly want a piña colada. And also a sweater, because it's weirdly cold.
Can we make it a tropical beach? This is kind of England-y or something. It makes me want to do sad music on a Casio.
This is the place, according to the generator.
So, three idiots stand on a cold beach without their windbreakers.
Windbreaker?
What?
Nothing.
Windbreaker. I think it's sort of evocative.
Yeah, it is evocative. I don't know what that means, though.
It evokes something interesting.
Yeah, evokes. It makes me think of something creepy or menacing.
Like maybe there's a war going on over that hill, and we're on the run.
Or we're three college friends meeting up after 20 years, and nothing is the same, and everything they do is a disappointment.
Well, we're not the characters in the story.
We're not good enough?
No, it's not that.
Not interesting enough? I'll have you know I am very interesting.
And so am I.
All right, I'll take your words for it. But we're letting the generator come up with something, and we haven't pressed characters yet.
Well, press it.
Oh, Mr. Bourgeoisie, we weren't expecting you.
No one expects their home to lose value. Yes, it's me. And I may have killed a man.
Oh, I can't believe that. And that's the plot in a lot of stories.
No, not really killed a man so much as I may have angered someone in a real estate deal.
What happened?
Okay. So, this property has this shared driveway because the original lot line was divided between two adjacent...
I'm going to stop you right there, Mr. B. I'm thinking that there's something wrong with the generator.
It's chilly out here. Am I the only one who's chilly? I'm freezing.
I'm getting used to it. And also, I'm wearing underwear.
Why would the generator create a real estate agent on a cold beach?
Part-time agent.
Part-time agent? But full-time?
Yeah, perfect. But what, though?
I'm trying to think. Full-time.
Part-time agent, but full-time.
Something clever.
For sure. Make it clever or ironic.
Sociopath.
Oh, wow. I wasn't expecting that.
Me neither. It just came out.
Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, as we stand together on a rocky shoreline and cast our vision to the gray seas that bid us lose ourselves in their majesty and vast menacing presence. And so I'll hold your hand if you want, or not, as we wait, whatever you need. If I do hold your hand, look away. Look back, I'm suddenly a little baby. Look away, look back, I'm an old man. I look at you, it's a skeleton hand. Oh, and now it's a young person's hand. And now, look, it's a monkey's paw. Oh, my friend, as we stand here on this cold, rocky shore, looking out to sea together, confused, let me be your monkey's paw. What is a monkey's paw, Hardy? Well, it's something upon which you may make a wish someday, and it will be granted. What should be my wish? Don't make up your mind right now. Hold on to the monkey's paw. You might need it later, and your wish will probably be, no, not this. But we don't know what this is yet, so we're just going to wait together. Oh, are you confused? Are you sad? Is something all mysterious to you? See, I don't know what's going on. I don't know how I got here on this beach, Hardy. I don't either. And what's the deal with us shifting between being old corpses and young people and everything? It's probably some sort of time rift. They have that. We must be in England. Because they have those in Wales, I understand, from Doctor Who. That they have some kind of rip in time. I don't know why they tore it. I guess because it's very old and delicate. It's like the Shroud of Turin. So let me see that. See if that's rip. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. I didn't realize how fragile it is. The older something is, the more fragile it is, unless it's a story. And then it gets magically reinforced as if it's been scotch-guarded with neurons. Shh. You can have spray on brain now. I'm not going to use it because it's dangerous. I looked at it, and it's just that construction foam, which is good for a lot of things. You can construct with it if you can control its parameters, you see. Because construction foam wants to go everywhere at once, as if it's exploding nuclear cloud and mushrooms everywhere. But if you have a form made, now I'm being highly symbolic here. This is for the advanced students. And by form, you know what I mean. And by construction foam, you know what I mean. And it goes in there. No, I don't know what you mean, Hardy. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm just giving you raw poetry. So you can't do that. It has to be pasteurized. It has to be cooked now. They don't want to sell the raw poetry because there's all sorts of lies in it and everything. Hey, what doesn't make you sick will make you throw up. And that's good. You want to purge it out of yourself. But you want to get the raw poetry because it has the good flavor on which grows the benevolent bacteria. Sir, do you do viral videos, Hardy? No, I'm a bacteria. A virus has a different strategy. Make a lot of itself. Now, I just want to get in there and create an odor that you say, I don't know if that's unpleasant or what, but I got to have it. Now I want all my cheese to sort of smell like that. Are you cheesy? Hardy, of course I am. Of course I'm cheesy. Aren't we all cheesy? A little bit. No, some of us are cool. There's cool cheese. There is. But you know what? With cheese and coolness, it loses flavor. If you want your cheese to have maximum flavor, leave it out on the counter for a while. Let it become the temperature of room, or what we call room temperature or cheese temperature. If you're living in a cheese room, which I know is some of y'all are little tiny mice. I have a lot of cartoon mice that listen to the show, and they say, oh, we have a fantasy in our world that we live in the cheese room, that there's a whole room of cheese.
Now, I'm sure they don't do this anyway, because by the time you hear about mouse lingo, that's not what they say anymore. But they used to say this, with living in the cheese room. And I want you to feel like that's where you're going with me. I know we're standing on this rocky shore. You might be a little scared. Say, Hardy, is this life and death? Am I on the shore of death or on the shore of life or something? Am I dreaming because these are my last days and my last thoughts? I say, I honestly am so sorry I wasn't listening to you because I thought I saw something in the ocean. It was probably just a wave. A lot of times we can't tell the distance between a wave and a distant ship of people who are coming to contaminate us with diseases and cut our throats and rape our women. That's the problem that a lot of native peoples had. They say, I think that's a wave on the horizon. No, it's the sail of a ship. You just simply have not seen a ship yet, so you don't know what one looks like. If I saw a sea monster, I might not know what it looked like. If I didn't know what it looked like, I might give it a cookie. If I give it a cookie, it might become its higher level self and start destroying everybody. Like that. Say, where's the real Harry Potter when we need him? Oh, some spoiled child living there and going to public school or private public school or whatever in England. Everything's flipped around. So they call what we call steak sauce, they call HP sauce, because that's what they call steaks, I guess. His porterhouse, his royal porterhouse, who is also a nobleman. So many dishes are named for noblemen. The sandwich is, of course, the Earl of Sandwich. And the Duke, is that a thing? I don't know. It is at some restaurant. We named this one after Duke, John Wayne. What is it? It's a big old piece of lung or something. God bless him. He's not with us anymore. So many of the old celebrities are, like Mary Pickford and all, are gone now. And I think I'm trying to think of some other ones. Who's the one with the Chester Conklin? And I could just sit here and name celebrities all day long. You know, I always get hung up on some, like that fella who's in every single Rockford File. What's his name? He's the bad sensei. It'll come to me. I love him. Go look on IMDb. He's been in 50,000 movies. His name's got to be the record. Please, let's celebrate this life with an Emma Oscar. I started. So how did you get your start? Right here on this beach, in fact. I come from here. I come from the rocky shore between the gray oceans and the unknown of the island. Which way should we go? Which one holds our future? Does our fate lie across the shore that way? Where you're pointing? Out to sea? Like we get a boat and we go that way? Is the safety that way is home? Or are we simply standing on the shore of our own land? And if we just turn around and go over that hill, we'll see our country people. What if we don't see our country people? What if we see the hostile people of this land? What if we don't belong here? What are all these stories you put in my mind? Hi, I'm Hardy White, and welcome to Victorian Literature Hour. In this hour, I will be telling you stories from my memories of school. I had a Victorian literature class when I was in kindergarten. A lot of it didn't stick with me because I hadn't done the reading, you know, and I just pretend and nod. Oh, Lord, they're giving me the benefit of the doubt. They're pretending like I've read it, which I think is, I mean, I'm honored because nobody is questioning that. You know, in some of the state schools, they give you a quiz to see if you did the reading. But here, oh, my goodness. I wish I could be a better kindergarten citizen, but I'm so afraid. I'm so little. I'm so challenged by some of the other students. They already know so much, all different numbers and all. And I'm just learning. And in my family, I come from a more conceptual kind of family. They don't believe in numbers or letters or anything. So I'm having a hard time. So I'm telling the teachers, you're trying to quantify something that's unquantifiable. And they look at me like, bleh. And I say, we just describe qualities, at points in time, not making some hard and fast rule. They didn't understand any of this because, you see, I come from a different race of people. Technically, they're not a race. They're a species of humans. And you think of them as being inferior. But Neanderthals, my ancestors, were actually quite advanced and had developed all sorts of... All the fun costumes you see on the Flintstones and all were designed by one of my ancestors, who you know is Edith Head. Now, she is also an immortal. As many of the
Neanderthals were. We found a way of being mortal. How's that? Don't pronounce the H. If you don't pronounce the H, we can't be killed. Now, if you say our name with the H, we turn to dust and go, I would love to sip. I've got a cup of coffee here. It's so cold out here on the beach, and I'd want to share it with you, but I put something in it. I spiked a little bit, and I don't want you to have any, so I don't know whether to deprive myself because you're not having any, or go ahead and I have the spiked coffee. And so I'm just going to go ahead and drink the rest of it. Hang on. Oh, it's delicious. So what'd you spike it with?
More coffee. I was just being selfish. I didn't want you to have any. I didn't feel like there was two servings. Why should both of us feel unfulfilled?
When I can feel entirely super fulfilled, and you wouldn't know what you're missing, really. That's the way I look at it. Oh, I hope it isn't. Found out today that my friend, Mr. Bourgeoisie, is a sociopath. They say, oh, that's horrible. He doesn't know right from wrong. Well, it's more complicated than that. He simply can't feel for other people. And I say, this can't be, Mr. Bourgeoisie. How is it you can't feel for other people? And he says, well, I simply can't. And I say, how do I know you're not putting on that, really? You're just telling yourself you can't. And he goes, well, why would I do that? And I said, well, to make things easier. If you don't recognize other people have feelings, then you don't have to pay attention to the consequences of your actions. And he said, no, legitimately, it's like gluten allergy. It's a real thing. I don't care about anybody. I said, really? Yeah. So if I was just like had my arm cut off right now, you wouldn't care. And he said, no, not really. He said, I don't like blood, though. It grosses me out, and it makes me think about my own mortality. But as far as you, like, I don't know. No, not really. I said, wow, that's something. I'm so sorry. Because I love it, frankly. I feel like a lot of you are fettered by your emotions. I said, well, all right. I'm going to have to trust you that you really can't feel what other people are experiencing, and I don't want you to really prove it. Well, would you like to just learn how to fake it, though? And he said, yes, dearly. Would you show me how to pretend how to be a decent person? I said, I'd love to, because I'll tell you what, it really does benefit even the sociopaths. That's what I tell them. I say, manners, we all love it. It's wonderful not to get food spit at you at a cocktail party or something. Who wouldn't like that? Even the most awful psychopath in the world, and I know a lot of them. Now, I'm not saying Genghis Khan was the reason I pronounce it like that is because I'm pretentious, was a psychopath, but we used to hang out a little bit, and oh my word, when that fella, his manners were atrocious, and there's not much you could say, because you think, well, he'll literally bite my head off. It's not just an expression with him, and even if it takes him a while, he said, I'm going to get that head off, and his teeth were so small. They'd say, oh, this is going to take him forever. And you'd start to feel it long before it threatened your life. Say, oh, Genghis is gnawing on my neck. And I feel like that now sometimes. I say, a tiny little tyrant is chewing on my neck. And maybe he could chew through if I let him. How do you not let him? Oh, don't let little tyrants on you. How do you prevent it? Wear the emotional equivalent of a turtleneck. So, oh, no one looks good in a turtleneck. It's desexualizing. So how is that possible? And nobody knows. It just is. I guess because you look like somebody's dressed up dog or something. Somebody's doggy who's cold. And so, oh, there's nothing worse than that. So you're a dog, but you have no strength of a dog. You're just a helpless dog. And that makes some people angry. Some people see tiny dogs and goes, angry, what are you even? You're violating the agreement, the pact that our species had. Because you were wolves that say, okay, you won't eat us if we help you find food and everything. But if you become so tiny that you can't even catch a mouse or something, and now you're just dependent, like you're just a dependent little baby, then I think we've got a problem. Or what if the dog has become so large that you spend all your money with wiping up its drool with paper towels? Oh, that one was not a wave. That is actually something out there. I know I saw something, some creature. It's interesting when you see just a little of something above the surface, like the tip of an iceberg. That's an expression. How do you know it's the tip of an iceberg and not just an iceberg tip? How do we know there's something below the surface? Maybe that's all there is. or maybe there's just a little more, or maybe there's a lot more, but it didn't go all the way down. How do we know what percentage we're seeing of something if part of it is obscured, or how do we know if anything's obscured at all? When we see the Loch Ness Monster, we see those humps going by. What if they're just humps? Or what if they're just the tip, something that encompasses the entire lock? It's as big as the lock. Well, why don't we see it when we go down in it? Because it is the lock. Well, that doesn't make any sense, Hardy. Well, what does make sense? Well, things we can prove. You can't just say the opposite of stuff like that all the time. I know it sounds interesting to you. I'm just using it as a way of getting ideas. I know that if I go through and I look at all my photographs in the photo negative, something's going to jump out as an interesting idea. Some of them are just going to be opposite of what they are, but something else, it might give birth to a third thing. I'm always looking for that. I'm always putting things together, jamming them together, looking for that perfect thing, like the Earl of Sandwich. I take the Earl of Sandwich and I jam them together with Chateaubriand and make a steak sandwich. Boom, like that. And they're two real people. Isn't that amazing? Chateaubriand? Well, yes. I've talked about them on the show. Oh, my word. But I tell you what, that's I'm always looking for that. I didn't invent the steak sandwich. I got a backup here. I did not do that. I'm sorry. I don't want to take credit for it. I did invent the caper sandwich, which isn't very good. It's very salty. So what are you eating? Oh, it looks horrible. I know. It seemed like a good idea. I thought, ooh, one caper, so tasty. And then you eat a lot of them, and you go, what is this? They're pickled flowers. Yeah. Pickled flowers are just meant to add a little accent to something. You put one flower on your lapel. But what if you were to put 500 flowers all over you, and that they could consume you? Because flower buds are like, when they get together like that and pack, they're like red ants, and they will eat your flesh completely. I saw a movie one time where they tied a fella down in the desert in Africa or something, and they covered him with rose petals, and then they came back the next day and it was a skeleton. Oh, I tell you, I don't know how that happened, but I'm sure it was the rose petals. Does just because something is causing something doesn't mean that it caused it in every universe. Some things are just locally causing things. Did you know that? I said, really? Yes. Like, I could tell you a joke here, and in another universe, it wouldn't be funny. Well, what if it's not funny here? And that's how you know it's funny in another one. So really, I'm always batting 100% somewhere. That's like he's saying it's always 5 o'clock somewhere. It's always 4:20 somewhere. It's always time to party. Woo-hoo in all universes. That's what there are dead people all in lots of possible realities who think that too. Wait, there is a universal interdimensional after 5. And I got to tell you that. A lot of space-time travelers won't tell you that. And they want to give you an excuse to party because a lot of them have vested economic interests in those big banners that say woohoo or whatever that they put up on those beach parties. And yes, they have those everywhere in the universe. Young people, come on now. I took another sip. Why are you drinking like that? You don't usually do that. I'll tell you, because it's cold and flu season and I can't get it unless I go around and drink these strangers' cups. And I need to get it because I want to feel what it's like to have somebody else's sickness in me. I want to experience what it feels like. I have come to this earth to experience. No, I'm a human being just like you. Just like you, I go around and I talk to the air because I don't want to. I talk to a hand puppet, but it's such a tired thing to do. And so I no longer bother to put the hand up with the puppet. I no longer bother with the puppet, nor do I bother with the other voice. So I just speak. I speak in a constant dialogue that sounds to the untrained ear like a monologue. A monologue it's not, though. You see, I'm talking to my little puppet friend. You just don't know which line belongs to whom. Oh, it should all blend together. I imagine my mind is a lot like the German singing group, the Comedy Harmonists. Why would you imagine that? I don't know, but I always think that, and I wish I knew their names so I could tell you which one represented which parts of my personality. Go inside my head, and it would be just like one of them Pixar movies. All little characters representing something. What do you represent, earwig?
I represent an earwig.
You say you talk about that a lot. Hardy, you seem to the same things come up and up. How does your brain work? It works like everybody's brain, and everybody's brain is based on the principle of the Slowly I Turn vaudeville skit. Every time someone says Niagara Falls, Niagara Falls, an emotional event in your past has somehow imprinted that on something else so that you can't say Niagara Falls, Niagara Falls, Slowly I Turn. They are wedded together. Niagara Falls and Slowly I Turn. It could be something else. That hotel in Montreal. That hotel in Montreal, copiously I cry or something. It's married somewhere in your memory. So these loops come up all the time. Whenever you think of something, say, oh, that Hardy, when he speaks on the radio, sounds to me like a stream of consciousness. Everybody's consciousness is a stream. You don't jump efficiently right to the file cabinet that has the idea that you wanted it in your brain. You have to go through a lot of stuff that you can't control because your consciousness has OCD or something. So when you say Niagara Falls, it's going to pull up Mo, Larry, and Curly or something like that, even if you know that's not what you want. So I know I want the actual Niagara Falls. Niagara Falls, dang it! And you're going to have to go through that loop-de-loop. You have to go through all those little loop-de-loop cul-de-sacs to get places. Oh, don't miss what they have to offer. Look at the ones that pop up that you don't notice. Why do I think certain things when I think other things? Maybe it's trying to tell me something. Maybe if I look for some connection that's not there, I'll actually make something new. Oh, I wonder what the child of Archie and Veronica would look like. Who knows? I say Jughead. They can't all be the same age like that. The hell they can't. They're cartoons. Who knows what is a combination of two other things? Oh, don't tell poems that the father can't be the son of the grandfather. Oh, of course he is. That makes sense. Don't tell the son that he can't be the grandfather. Son of the same person. Don't tell me I can't be my own Uncle Bob. I can. All I have to do is I say, I am Uncle Bob. Bang, and Bob's your uncle. No, whoops, no, I want him to be mine. But everything I do to myself, I also do to others. Why is that? What are you, a tattoo artist? Piercer? No? But I do put out consequences without knowing it. First of all, on Halloween, I think smells are the most interesting things more than sights. So I put out horrifying odors. Now, apparently, this is not okay. I don't know why this is worse than putting out visual stimulus like that or audio. That's another thing. I used to have people screaming in pain on Halloween all night and all day and everything from the yard. Oh, we love the macabre, don't we? Oh, the macabre. Not just a scary Scottish clan, but also a word and spelled macabre like that. What's that? What's the brr on the end? French do that. French do that, and they write it down, and then they wait around the corner for us to come up and try to read the word, and then they giggle when we say the R. That's just something they do. Listen, oh, and I have smells in the front yard. I say, what should I have? Something rotting, maybe. We don't always say that. Oh, death. What if the place also smelled of death? Oh, Hardy, that's so harsh. Smell that ocean, yeah? You know what? What? Fish poo in that ocean. Oh, come on, stop. They do. And guess what else they do? What? They die in that ocean. Yeah? Yes. Yes. That ocean is a vast pool of death. Is it? And life. Yes? So it's a big soup of dead things. Big soup of dead things and poo. In which are born new things. New life. New fishes. New fishes? What kind? The kind you ate last, was it last month? I haven't had fish in a while. I thought it was farm-raised. It could have been. I don't know. I get a lot of farm-raised fish from China. You know what I did get, though, unfortunately? It was a fish from China that was actually meant
for the Fish of Dead Museum. It's a museum where fish, they take dead fish, they take their skins off, and they pose them doing things like throwing fish frisbees. And they're made in China. They take dead fish that have been killed by the government, and they put them in plastic, and they pose them like that. So, oh, I think I saw that as an episode of SpongeBob. Probably not. I don't know if they would tackle something that political, that politically charged. Who has the right to your remains? Who has the right to the remains of your mind? Who has the right to your corpse? The next of kin has the right to your corpse. Who has the right to your body when you're alive? You have the right to your body when you're alive. Who has the right to your body when you're dead? I don't know. You won't be here. But let me... But just, I'm saying, though, by other people who loved you don't want your body messed around with or anything necessarily. I think it'd be disturbing. So I do care, I think, what happens to it. So maybe there should be some sorts of laws. If you'd say, hey, no, I want to be, you know, posed. And how many times have... Now you gotta yell Jeremy Bentham and take a drink. And we think about all the people that have been posed corpses in life. Say, why are you so obsessed with that, Hardy? Because I love to live with my friend Memento Mori, and he doesn't just, his name's not just Mori and he sells mementos. That would be clever. Cartoon man. But really, Memento Mori, remember you die, live always with impermanency. And at the same time, embrace eternity. How do you keep those two thoughts in your head at the same time? Well, I think it's, I tell you, you gotta lie to both of them. That's what I say. So you're the only one, baby. I love you, life. Oh, I love you too. And then you go in the other room and go, death, it's all right. Death, oh death. I will dance with you until it's time. So, okay, thank you. And I just keep lying there. And I try to become comfortable with both of them. Oh, who brought you to the dance? Uber? I'm not going to leave with them, though. That's not how that works. Everything that we think is conventional wisdom was thought up in a convention. I don't want that. I want some kind of artisanal wisdom that some hippie came up with in a shop. I made this myself. I carved it out. What is it? Oh, it's basically just, you know, some rules about... cognitive things. Oh, that's kind of, that's basic. It's going to work for me, though. Well, I wanted to create something more elaborate. Lou, is that you?
Yeah, it's me. I'm sorry.
You were like halfway between me and you. I didn't know who I was talking to.
I love to do that. I love when we conflate.
I know we get, that you get into my head and everything.
We finish each other's
sentences.
Sentences. I knew it. Something like that. Do you mind if I get out of your head for a minute? It's getting kind of cramped in here.
No, go ahead, Lou, man. Stretch out. Stretch yourself.
Thanks. You know, technically, I don't need any of these arms or legs, but I like to have a set of my own just in case. It's like Mad Money. Mad Libs. No, I know you think I said Mad Libs.
I did think you said that.
I said Mad Limbs, though. Like Mad Money, in case I need to run off.
You can't run off, though, because you're also an aspect of myself.
Or you of me.
Oh, that's... Yeah, that's interesting. Who thought of whom?
That's right. Probably you, because you got your grammar correct.
Right, you would have said who. Who thought of who?
I would have. That's how you know I'm the copy.
I know. And also you speak, you got to add, kind of add noise. I don't know what's wrong with your voice. It's got, like someone pointed out, vocal fry.
Yeah, I got that. I'm fried for sure. I got the vocal fried. I've been frying it up in there.
Yeah, I don't know what. Why is that?
Well, because a lot of tooth and throat singing.
I do. Oh, do you really?
Yeah. I call it coughing.
Oh, okay.
But it's in, and I do it inadvertently. You see, I got overtones.
You do. It's like more than one. You like you got one of those guitars that's also got harp strings on it.
If you see those, run.
I know. Oh, my goodness. How many strings, if you see on a guitar, should you leave the open mic? Like 12 is okay. I mean, 12 string guitar could be okay.
Could be.
And then,
Lead Belly, right?
I think, yeah. I think he had a 12, so you don't know. It could be good, but maybe 50?
50, yeah, that's a problem. Is it a harp, though?
I don't know. See, it could be.
Would that be all right?
There shouldn't be rules like this.
I tell you what, if you want to bring your harp guitar to open mic night, at least have a sense of humor about it. Oh, don't expect everybody to come over to your story and think it's brilliant. Just be excited to put something out there. That's the problem, usually, is our expectations. Say, oh, I feel disappointed. Say, let me go in and look at your expectations, my friend. Oh, whoops, they're a little too high. I can take you to the gym right now and make you feel strong. And just by looking at your routine and cutting 20 pounds off of it. Say, oh, but I'm not going to be get big old muscles and all, Hardy. Say, well, get my name right, first of all. See, you've been lifting so much, the blood's not going to your head. You're going to swell up those biceps, but all you're going to have are swollen biceps. Why do you need to lift that much up like that? Do you have you're smoking a 30-pound cigar or something like that? Your coffee cup now weighs 40 pounds that you need, your bicep needs to be that big? Say, yes, but I want to look at people admire musculature. They want somebody to look strong. Well, okay. Well, tell me what you do for a living. And I'll tell you whether you need do mixed martial arts. All right. Okay. I'm sorry. Go for it then. I was wrong. I thought maybe you did something else. I don't know. Not that a real estate agent wouldn't need enormous biceps. Oh my goodness, you do a lot of times, because you don't know whether you're going to have to lift to get it out of the way. You walk in the front door, and sometimes they'll have a giant 500-pound Chinese sculpture made of lead, and say, we can't even get in if we don't move this. That's why all real estate agents have to work out like that, and they do. They go to a real estate course when they're trying to pass the real estate test. They do that and CrossFit simultaneously. So, pick up get that dog, get that dang escrow up there, they call it. I don't know much about either one of those worlds. I'm just here. I wandered up on this beach. And I saw you sleeping. And I said,
hey, you want a party?
No, but that would happen. If you ever say, I want to sleep alone on this abandoned stretch of beach here. Just me and the sea. And then there's going to be some...
Hey, buddy!
Somebody come up in the middle of the night and say, how did you get here? And how did you... You know, you smell like you ran out of vodka.
Yep.
Always humanity is going to find you. It's a magnet. See, people like other people. Want to be around.
Let's form a society.
All right. How you want to do that? Oh, there's going to be lots of rules and everything. I'd rather sneak around in it after it's built. I'm a child. I would rather run through the house. You build a big house. I'm going to hide in a little place in the basement, in a little closet, until the house is done. And then I'm going to scamper around in those rooms. I don't need to own anything. I'm going to sneak into the kitchen at night and steal little pieces of cheese and bread, and I'm going to sustain myself on that. And then when you're gone, I'm going to run from room to room, laughing and frolicking and playing on my lute or my panpipes. And you'll come in and you'll say, there's a very pasty, white, naked, middle-aged person playing my panpipes and flitting from room to room. And I think he's got pieces of cheese in his long white beard. Leave me alone! And I'll scamper back to my little closet in your house. That is how I feel in society a little bit. I feel like perhaps I'm not one of the leaders, the adults that goes out there to work every day at the Campbell Soup Company and comes home at night and says, why do I do this? My life is a sham. And falls asleep watching TV, repeats the same life tomorrow until they die, perishing in the very chair that they used to watch TV in, one day bleeding over into eternity. Oh, all of it's gone and worth remembering. Who is your uncle who died alone? The New York Times had an article not long ago last week about a fella dying alone in his apartment in Queens or somewhere, and what happens when you die by yourself with all your rubbish around you and all the detritus of your life, and there's nobody there to take it. You've got no relatives, just you alone in the world. What becomes of you? Oh, and so they try to create some sort of story. But that person's life defies that. They can't do it. They can't come up with it. I love it. That person took their story to the grave because it doesn't belong to you. Don't try to make sense out of it. It was complicated. Things change from day to day. Time forces you to be different people at different times. Oh, every time that you move from one room of the mansion to the other room, you must sometimes change your costume, your accent,
your attitude. I'm now in the dining room. It is no longer appropriate to wear my riding boots. No, it is, because it's riding. We're having a riding boot theme. Nifty. That's cool. And wear your hat, because it's a costume affair. Oh, the rules are always changing. I should check the mansion newsletter. Who's working on that now? Nobody. They're fired. They had some part-time person on it, and they fired her, which I think is stupid. Now who's gonna? Now we don't know what's going on or anything. They say, oh, check online, but nobody. That site is never updated. I don't know what's going on because nobody's updating the website for this world. I try to tune in and say, what are the answers? Oh, I mean, well, there's so many of us who want to do the right thing, who want to be cooperate, who want to please others, but they don't know exactly what to do. It seems if they follow their heart, they get criticized for that. Say, oh, it's not right to care about one another. It's not right to put all sorts of sandwich spreads on your face and go screaming through a shopping mall like that. That's not, society frowns on that. Society frowns on you expressing yourself in other ways, like by doing this, oh, wonderful needlepoint portraits of campy, different campy figures, which I think is grand. I think they look nice. And just they take so much time. That even though you say, oh, I didn't even know it was Joey Buttafuoco or something, I couldn't recognize him, it's still, it's like, wow, it's amazing. The work is still beautiful. It doesn't matter who it's of. That's just an added degree of poetry. Oh, you find a beautiful poem that's created out of two things. Say, I have a black walnut tree, and the black walnuts are like brains. I have tiny brains. I hold a handful of brains in my hand. How many minds have I now? The minds I collect like nuts are like the minds that my ideas come from. All the writers and artists in the past, all of them gathered together there in the palms of my hands. And then that's the poem. And then there's this thing you can put on it, the title. And you call the whole poem George Orwell or something. And you open up an entirely different world. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? Because you put something against that. And the more complicated things you put all against one another, the more unfolding there is. Oh, this sounds beautiful and spiritual. Thank you, Hardy. I'm just killing time till we die. Honestly, I'm so sorry. I'm not giving you any answers. What I'm thinking, we're standing on this beach, and I know that made you feel good. I'm afraid it didn't have any real content. So I was just really, I'm holding your hand, and I'm singing the songs, and I'm not pretending that the songs themselves have any real meaning besides right now, what I'm using them for right now, which is to cheer you up and just get a little smile on that face as we look out. Of course I'm smiling. We're looking out on the... We're celebrating. Oh, okay. That's great, too. Yes, there's a wedding going on. Oh, a wedding. I don't know why I assumed it was something tragic, because we're looking out in the ocean and it's gray and said, but a wedding. Fantastic. Let's look out there and think about all the possibilities and just the fun of getting a community together and people and making promises to one another about love. That alone is fantastic. We don't worry about what happens to the couple in the future. All we know is that, oh, we're getting together and the excuse is love. Can't go wrong there. There'll be some throwing up, granted, maybe even some yelling. And depending on the type of crowd, somebody might get hit. I don't want that. I've been to some very beautiful, wonderful weddings, though. It's just flow. There's nothing crazy over-planned about them. They just have enough booze and enough food. And everybody else fills in the rest with their joyful intentions. We stand together on this beach, you and I. And I suppose we don't know one another. And I look at you and I say, you know, I don't know what's going on, how long we have here. I look out at this ocean and it's very frightening to me. I hope that's not where we're going, but I suspect it is. I suspect that this vast, scary thing is going to want us back. Where we came from, and I suppose that we're going back there. Yes, I think you're right. Yes.
But I'll tell you this, I'm really enjoying our brief interaction here. This feels transcendent. This feels like something that the ocean cannot achieve by itself, that we are somehow making something eternal out of this big soup of death and bubbling organic goo in front of us. When you put it that way, what does that smell? It's salty. Oh, it is. It's salty, tasty. What is it? It's life. What flavor is life? It's umami. It's something that's sort of savory and it's hard to define. But I know it when I taste it. And it's fishy like this ocean, isn't it? Yes. It's something that has life and death in it, in the same bite. It is, isn't it? It is. It's weirdly has that balance. That's why we're standing on the edge of the shore. That's why we're letting the water come up and touch our feet. But the backs of our feet are dry and they face towards the land. And I'm looking at you and I'm saying, I'm glad I'm here with you. What would it make you, what age would you be most comfortable with me being or you being? Because I don't want to be, like a lot of say, if we're standing here and I'm middle-aged and you're middle-aged, you might look at me and say, I don't know, somebody else like me or whatever. Do you want me to be a little child? Should I be a little child? Should I be an old man? Do you feel more comfortable with the elderly? Do you feel less threatened by the elderly? What if it's an old man in a wheelchair? Stand here on the shore and hold my hand. Perhaps if you were comforting me, you wouldn't think about your own fears so much. Hold my hand. I'm an old man. I'm standing here on these shores. I don't know what's going to happen to either one of us. You want to entertain me? Can you tell me something? Tell me a funny story or sing me a little song. Come up with a poem or something. You know what I'd really like? You to do a humiliating dance. Can you do some just silly? Look at that. Make humiliate yourself. Oh, look, something more foolish. Did you pull your pants down and show your bottom? Oh, I'm sorry. Also, I'm a sociopath. I'm so sorry. I should have introduced that. I think we violated the compact there. You thought I had your best interest in mind. No, I do. Oh, bless your heart. Who knows? The lesson is here. If we're bringing joy, can we ever really have humiliated ourselves? Can anything be really humiliating, considering the context, this life, which is inherently humiliating? Everybody who thinks they're being cool, come on. You are, as they said on Star Trek, the movie, ugly bags of mostly water is what you are. Everything you see is dead, head hair, body hair, nails, teeth, and skin. The external world is the world of rotten decay. Look at you. And then there's the transcendent eternal self. Yes, I can see it. I recognize it. How'd you learn about that? From a comic book, I think. I think I read it in a comic book. It doesn't matter where you get ideas. I'm sure it came from somewhere legitimate. If I read a recipe online, and you say, how do you know the legitimacy of that recipe? I think somebody just transcribed it from the Joy of Cooking. That's how I know. That's how I know how to skin a squirrel. Joy of Cooking. It's right in there. In my copy, anyway. They might have taken it out. But they used to have that. That's a famous cookbook in which they had how to like skin a possum, a squirrel, and everything. They don't know. But he goes, I'm going to need to make some burgoo. Real burgoo has squirrel in it, I've learned. I'm a transplant to Kentucky. I'm not from here. I'm from... So where are you from? Because I can't place you. I wish you wouldn't. I hope so. That sounds ominous. I don't want to be placed. Some sort of camp or something. Don't place me. I'll place myself. You go in, the government has duplexes you have to move into. I don't want to do that. But I'll tell you what. I'm from... Now, a lot of people say, oh, I'm from Saturn or something. It's a way of shorthand of saying they're from another dimension, another world and everything. And I also like that, but I don't say... I'm from Jupiter, or I'm from Neptune, because those are real cities, or I'm from Boca Raton, because those are real cities in Florida, all right? And the place I'm from is in another dimension, in another universe, where Florida and New Jersey are the same state. And I'm just like, how can that be? And it is, it's flipped, though. So South Florida is North Jersey, and North Florida is South Jersey. So I guess, I don't know how it gets, Tallahassee is like Vineland or something. I really don't know. I can't do it geographically for you. What's the Florida version of Jersey City? Hard to say. Really, I don't know. I suppose. Hollywood? It really, we don't know anymore. Because I haven't been to that universe in so long. Because there was one airline going there, and they don't run anymore. So it was just a tiny little commuter ship. I said, it's just not worth it to go back and forth anymore. You are stuck here. Being an adult is like that. So I know I came from a magical place called childhood. It's called childhood, but it's a prison camp for aliens. Or the real childhood. Oh, that's a good analogy. Let's do that one. Yes, I came from a place, free place called childhood. And now, Hardy, I'm in this other world where I've lost touch with that child. And I say, that's probably good. That's okay, but you got to be that child. Don't go back and retouch the child. Move on, because that might be the problem. So I want to live in that world again. No, let's move on. Let's go some sort of creepy, hard, old person world. Try that out for a while. All sorts of challenges. Don't you love them? Isn't life like some show, game show, that's been put together by some crazy, well-meaning but inadvertently sadistic being? So now you got to jump onto that big pillow-shaped thing. Oh, you fell in the goo. You fell in a tub of goo. Ha-ha. So it's not ha-ha to me. It's horrible. I don't want to fall in the goo. To us, it's not a joke. Oh, the living cry out and say, you inadvertently have done something, universe. It feels to experience these things. It feels to see. It feels to hear. It feels to smell. When I smell the Halloween odors emanating from Hardy White's yard, they really get up in my nose, and I say I smell death for real. And I say, you know, that's just a combination of four easy-to-get cheeses. It's not death at all. I make my own death smell. And then when you're done with it, you can top a pizza with it. Who would want to? To me, it's good. Add some... I just take the contents of my caper sandwich, too. Put that on there. Oh, Hardy, you know how to cook. You know why I know how to cook? Because I cook. Say, oh, Hardy, you know how to talk. You know why I know how to talk? Because I talk. Oh, Hardy, you know how to listen. You know what I'd like to eat right now? Is some sort of sandwich or something. I guess because I was talking about it. And that made me think of it. Go on. I'm sorry. What were you saying? Oh, bless your heart. I pay attention as much as I can. And I think sometimes I look as if I'm a good companion. Like maybe would if you had a stuffed animal. If you're really lonely and you had a stuffed animal, for a while I think it'd be enough company. So you talk to the stuffed animal. And then after a while you'd look at it and you go, you know what? That's just a pillow. It's not doing anything. I'm doing all the talking. And we all feel like that. But I'll tell you, remake yourself. Here's a recipe. Take half of your consciousness and make it into a sort of stuffed animal that you then stuff back in your head and you occasionally talk to, and who talks back in a voice that's like yours but deeper. I don't know if that's going to replace psychoanalysis. Probably not.
I think it will.
You be quiet, you silly. Get back in there.
All right.
But it could. I don't know. For you, it does. It doesn't for me. But I can have recipes and give you recipes that I myself do not like. How's that not possible? That's very impossible. I don't have to eat something to give it to you. Am I right? Say, I would never deprive you of a Waldorf salad. But is that something I would put into my mouth? Heck no. Never, never. Because to me, the combination of flavors are disgusting. But again, that's just me. And somebody from the Waldorf is, I know, right now, scribbling a nasty note to me. It's not you, friend. I'm sure the Waldorf is a wonderful, wonderful place. And they have other things besides salad. And all of it is smeared with mayonnaise. Isn't that weird? So, yes, I got into my room and I noticed everything is covered with mayonnaise.
Is there a problem, sir?
And nuts.
Yes. Is there a problem?
Well, I don't know. How do I... I can't really watch... Do I wipe them off of the TV screen to watch it?
Why would you want to do that? Then it's not a Waldorf TV.
Well,
I guess that's a good argument. If you take the main ingredients out of something, will it still be the something it is? If you take a brain out of a person, will they still be a person? Yes, but they'll be able to make all sorts of career choices that they wouldn't normally would have been able to make because of their reason and sense of ethics. Just take that brain out. Oh my goodness, the world opens up to you. So, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to start a business that sells nothing. Are you cynical? Well, my friends, don't be. I'll tell you why. Because I don't know who you are exactly, but I bet you touched and changed my life. I know it's possible. Because if you let yourself be changed, you can be. People will do things for you and will bless you. And some of you have blessed me with your support. The radio station also needs your support and are taking a little money in right now so that we can stay on the air. We'd love to have your money. Also, it makes me look good. It's some sort of silent contest. It's like, oh, hard of what? The people who listen to them don't care enough to put a little money in. So please do, in my name, stick a little money in there to WFMU. I almost forgot their name. What if I said something different? And we'll all be blessed. I'll mainly be blessed because we get to keep communicating. And we get to keep speaking to one another. And that's not just a blessing. It's a miracle, isn't it? This day and age, to have some sort of conversation like this where just I'm talking and you're listening. God bless you. But you can always contact me. And I would also like to thank those who have already generously donated not just their money, but just their money, which is what we are needing right now, and I'd like to thank them. I may do some, I already thanked some people last week, so if I duplicate your name and thank you again, I'm sorry. But that's not really a sorry. Thank you, Carrie in South Pasadena so much. Thank you, Naomi in Leeds. Thank you, Dan in St. Paul. Thank you, Katie in Tallahassee, that's how I pronounce it. Thank you, Mark in Brooklyn. Thank you, John in Cranford. Thanks, James in Lee. Thanks, Dave in Woburn. Thanks, Carlos in Wilmington. Thanks, Kimberly in Brooklyn. Thanks, Mondwane in Teaneck. I think I am repeating myself. Robert in Brooklyn. Thanks, David in Brooklyn. Thanks, Brian in Lolita. Thanks, Arthur in San Diego. Thanks, Brendan in Newburyport. Thanks, David in Gettysburg. Thanks, Court in Evanston. Thanks, Scott in Minneapolis. I did. Greg in Bloomfield. Now, I think I'm starting with Greg. Oh, so Greg in Bloomfield. Thank you, Robert in Manchester. Thank you, Michael in Burlington. Thank you, Eli in Palo Alto. Thank you so much, Honey in Maplewood. Thank you, Ben in Brooklyn. Thank you so much, Morgan in Brooklyn. Thank you, David in Jersey City. Thank you, Jake in Sussex. Thank you, Julia in Los Angeles. Thank you, Tim in the Bronx. Oh, my goodness. I'm so thankful for all of you, too. Thank you, each and every one of you, for tuning in and listening and hopefully enjoying the show. And I want you to just, if you have any troubles, this is what I want you to do. Work on that. Work on the troubles. Not a problem. Get some help. Also, get some help. Others will pitch in, help you out for a little while. And then when you wear them out, get some new ones, get some new helpers, and we should be okay. Listen to some old shows. Occasionally treat yourself to something. Something sweet like that. Go out, challenge yourself, be a little uncomfortable sometimes. Always wear certain, ask your friends about what colors look good on you. Things like that. Now I'm just giving you silly advice. I just want you to know there's somebody there for you always. And you needn't go into this world lonely. There's plenty of other people out there. And one of them that can make you feel very not alone is you. Oh, inside is your secret comforter. And yes, I mean that like a blanket. Search it out. Wrap yourself up in it and be well and warm. Bless you, and I'll see you again next week. I love you.
Pure in heart, they shall see God.
Yes, they shall see God.
They shall see God.
Yes, they shall see God.
Blessed are.
Yes, they shall see God.
The pure in heart.
Yes, they shall see God.
They shall see God.
Yes, they shall see God.
They shall see God.
Yes. They shall see God.
Oh, Lord, no matter
how. They shall see God.
How you suffer.
Yes, they shall see God.
Just keep on working.
Yes, they shall see God.
Oh, my Lord.
Yes, they shall see God.
So blessed are.
Yes, they shall see God.
The poor in spirit.
Yes, they shall see God.
They shall see God.
Yes, they shall see God.
They shall see God.
Yes, they shall see God.
Blessed are.
Yes, they shall see God.
The pure in heart.
Yes, they shall see God.
They shall see God.
Yes, they shall see God.
They shall see God.
Yes, they shall see God.
Blessed are.
Yes, they shall see God.
The pure in heart.
Yes, they shall see God.
They shall see God.
Yes, they shall see God.
They shall see God.
Yes, they shall see God.
Just keep on working.
Yes, they shall see God.
By my life.
Yes, they shall see God.
You know it, God.
Yes, they shall see God.
Your just reward.
Yes, they shall see God.
So blessed are.
Yes, they shall see God.
The pure in heart.
Yes, they shall see God.
They shall see God.
Yes, they shall see God.
They shall see God.
Yes, they shall see God.
Blessed are.
Yes, they shall see God.
The pure in heart.
Yes, they shall see God.
They shall see God.
Yes, they shall see God.
They shall see God.
Yes, they shall see God.
They shall see God.
Oh, they tell. I got a home.
So, yeah.
Got a home.
Tell me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, they tell me.
Oh, yeah, they tell me.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Far, far away.
The unmistakable sounds of the Staple Singers' An Uncloudy Day. It should be the unmistakable sounds of the Staple Singers here on Sinner's Crossroads on WFMU. Uncloudy Day, coming courtesy of the 78 RPM Media on the BJ record label. Around 1958 or so on that one. And right before that, we heard a great record from the Heavenly Bound Gospel Singers. A blessed are the pure.